And Loris Olson was sworn in as a Story County Supervisor in January of 2017, and this month she became the chair. And welcome back to KHOI, Loris. You've been here before.
Thank you. I have. Fond memories.
Numerous capacities.
Yes.
So let's talk about the county. What do you see for Story County in 2019?
I see us getting off to a very robust start right away and jumping off from where we ended last year. One of the things we did last year that now is happening this week is we're installing a new audiovisual system into the boardroom. There have been lots of complaints about our audio, and the visual itself usually is okay. It still will be kind of static, but what we're hoping is that that will allow people to follow us better online.
So what this means that you're videotaping the meetings so people can watch them online?
Correct. We're still videotaping. My dream is hopefully we will figure out how to stream given the live bandwidth. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's been interesting to me to coming on that is all of the protocols that have to be in place to make sure that we're not hacked, because we retain so much information. And when I was a reporter covering the board, I would be talking to the IT person, and finally, you know, it's like I couldn't just download something, and I had to bring in, finally we worked out a new flash drive. I had to bring a new flash drive every time so I didn't introduce a virus, etc. And now that I'm there and I realize these levels, well, then that makes a difference on the bandwidth we use and what kind of equipment. I'm excited about the new audio visual, I know, in the great scheme of things. Another thing that's going to be coming up this year that the discussion started last year, and this is not only countywide but involves ISU and the city of Ames, and that is the new interoperability communication systems
among
responders. I know it's a big little title there. Right now, all of our first responders and our emergency personnel and our law enforcement, they can't easily talk to each other. They're on different systems. Some of the equipment is very, very old. And in fact, the equipment's so old we can't get replacement parts in some of them anymore. And we're talking about all the way from ISU's public safety to, of course, City of Ames, the fire department, the police, and then you come over to the sheriff's department. But also it's all of your volunteer fire departments, and it's your volunteer EMS people. There's an initiative at the state to get up more towers and try to get interoperability, and now the county, ISU, and the city have actually formed a 28E, which is the official contractual way that we would interact, and we are looking at a system. Right now, the two companies that bid on it are trying to work with our contractor to try to determine who will be selected. We were hoping it would be a $10 million bill. Ouch. And the quotes we got back are $13 million to start with. So they're working on trying to get that down. But we have places out in the county right now where the first responders are talking to each other by cell phones because their radios don't work or their blockages. So that's going to be a big project coming on. Watersheds are going to be a huge discussion for us this year. Last year, the county, we paid a consultant to come in and do an evaluation of each of our what are called HUC 12s. They're the smaller ones. So Squaw Creek Watershed, which you hear about sometimes, and also the South Skunk Watershed, which we formed agencies to deal with, but they are 10s. And the higher you go, the smaller the watershed. Okay, the smaller the area. So we paid to get all of them evaluated. We've discovered we don't have data on all of them. But this year, we're going to start implementing, discussing, how are we going to deal now with the watersheds? Now that we have the baseline information and which ones have been monitored, now what do we do? So one of the things I think at some point we'll be coming back to the public will be to find out if there would be some more public who would be interested in monitoring, helping us gather some of that data, just like there are monitors on the Squaw Creek watershed right now.
When you say, what do we do with the watersheds, what does one do? What kind of actions are you talking about?
We need to determine what mitigation strategies, if they are in fact impaired, what do we want to do with interacting with the farmers who may not be using cover crops? So some of that would be the mitigation to try and help clean it up.
So you're talking about The cleanliness of the water.
The cleanliness of the water also. Also related to that is last year that our planning and zoning department, planning and development department, started working on a new stormwater ordinance for development in the rural parts of the county. And we expect that to come forward to us as the supervisors within the first quarter. Mm-hmm. Another issue that we're going to be taking a look very, very quickly is that at the end of the year, we had three applications for confined animal feeding operations that came forward. And that was in December. And now there, it looks like we discussed yesterday that we'll be putting a possible appeal of that to the DNR for discussion. It'll be on the agenda on next Tuesday. But I think an even bigger item than that is every year we have to, as a county, every county decides whether they want to use the scoring system fondly called, or not fondly called, the Master Matrix.
The infamous Master Matrix.
And there are many people who feel it's very slanted toward the producers right now and the integrators. Mm-hmm. Well, we get every year many members of the public who come to comment on that or send information. And we learned in December, given the large crowd that turned out for the three Henry applications, sorry, Longview Pork is that the actual name of the family's company. And now decided that it was time that we have a more robust conversation on that. That is also in addition to Supervisor Linda Merkin coming on board, and she would like us to take a look at sending a letter to the state or a moratorium resolution, or there's all kinds of different things that we can do to go on the record, as have about 22 or 23 other counties. And that's something I never brought up because I knew there wasn't an appetite with the other two supervisors. And sometimes you learn about where to dedicate your staff's time, and it starts with the supervisors voting at least two of us to say we're going to spend some time and resources that way.
So the CAFO story isn't completely over yet. You're continuing a discussion about it.
We're continuing a discussion about it. Supervisor Merkin had been asked by some citizens about a possible appeal, and we're going through the steps to bring that to a discussion at the board on the 15th and allow some public input. People are going to find out that despite my past as a journalist and my very vigorous advocacy for letting every citizen speak, that probably there will be some limits about how long people can talk and how broad that topic can go, because we'll have this special meeting on January 22nd in the evening at Gates Hall.
And that'll be a public meeting.
That one will, yes, both are public meetings, but as far as the discussion.
For public comment.
For public comment, that the one that will be that Tuesday night at Gates Hall will be to discuss the philosophy and not focused on any one entity about what does the county want to weigh in on, what kind of stance do we want to take, what are the pros and the cons. And so, we expect a lot of the confinement owners to be there also. And
to speak up.
I'll be working, I believe, with both groups who would like to see a very, you know, the moratorium, et cetera, and the local Farm Bureau organization to see that that's a good orderly meeting, that people get to express themselves without a fear of either being harassed or anything. The meeting on the 15th will be very limited as far as focused on do we want to appeal or not.
So, Loris, you mentioned that one of the reasons you're pursuing this is because there's been a change in the voting on this County Board of Supervisors.
Correct.
And with you and Linda there, there's... My question is, do you see a shift in the County Board of Supervisors? Does this year see a change in the outlook or the way the supervisors is going to be viewing the county?
All three of the supervisors that are on the board now believe in doing the best, and I think county growth. I mean, that we are a progressive county. We are fortunate that we have enough tax revenue, but it's a situation we always have to look at growth going on. What will change is the conversation as far as what constitutes good economic growth. What type of return should you get from that? What constitutes quality of life? There's a lot of interaction between the two of them, a lot of discussion. I will be sitting on the Ames Economic Development Commission now, and that's a position that Supervisor Sanders had held for about 5 years. And with that comes a seat on the Executive Committee of the Ames Economic Development Commission.
So, you know, defining growth is a goal that's universal to everybody. What's going to be different this time?
Well, for me personally, and one of my priorities all along has been housing. We call it affordable housing, but we actually have two needs. One is for really low and moderate income people, providing housing for people who are making very low wages or are living on kind of fixed incomes. But there's a whole nother strata out there now that has to do with what I think people my age, being a little bit older, call starter housing. It's that small square footage, maybe 900 square feet to 1,000 square feet that people used to get into when they first started out their careers. And we have a lack of that. And certainly in Ames, and I don't know that we can fix a lot of it in Ames because of how landlocked it is as far as available within the city limits. And the growth that is happening, those housing starts are at $300,000. I don't know about the listeners out there, but I don't live in a $300,000 house. So we know that there's that. But so then we're talking about pushing out into the communities like Nevada and Huxley and Story City, all of who are starting to see interest in doing housing. There's also growth as in the accommodating of the workforce. As you've read over and over again, our unemployment rate is so low. And now there's a push, an effort, a combination between United Way and the county and also the chamber to figure out how to remove some barriers from people who have historically not had access to jobs. People don't think about us as being a manufacturing sector, but we do have significant manufacturers that are paying to start $18 and $19 an hour. And now they're really approaching, whether it be DMAC or, you know, through United Way, they need training programs because they are much more willing to hire someone who doesn't have that perfect look at resume with 3 seconds, you know, that normally happens and they flip it over. They're willing to train. And an example is EB up in Story City. They need to add 64 employees for their expansion. 40 of them need to be welders. You can't find 40 unemployed welders in central Iowa.
That's
so
right.
DMAC's going to come in and train them. Mm-hmm. So that's growth also.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we accommodate that growth? I don't want to say easy, so because everybody down at the ISU Research Park would say, how would he mean? This nothing's easy to get companies to come here. But we have some real benefits. Iowa State, and it is the ag sector. How do we even integrate that ag sector with the reality of some of the issues we're facing in agriculture? So yes, so there will be different conversations than there have been at the past. It's quite likely that we will end up in the same place on some of these.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you, Laura. So we're just in the last few minutes here.
Sure.
You used to be a reporter.
Yes.
You used to report a lot on government. Is it different running government than reporting on it?
Incredibly different. And most people felt I was pretty well prepared coming in. But when you get internally, you see how many different departments might have to be consulted that you never see when you're sitting out there and you're doing the reporting. You're reporting pretty much on the back end. It also is the interaction between the various levels of government, the funding. Once again, you write about how something's going to be paid for and from what fund, but you have no concept about what goes in behind the scenes. The other thing is, I mean, I had covered government for two decades. And I always knew that government employees were not the cliche that everybody talks about, that the vast majority show up and they want to do a good job and they're working for government anymore. It's not the same what people used to call a sweet deal, right? Okay.
Oh, it's public service.
It's public service. And you put up with some people who are not happy. You deal with budget constraints and all of that. And I constantly am amazed by what public servants do that we don't think about on that. So I have really learned a new level for them.
It's amazing, right?
Well, it is.
Yeah. Well, Loris, we're kind of running out of time, but just for those, I think most people, you've lived in the central Iowa area for quite a while.
Right.
But just for those people that don't know you, just give like a 2-minute synopsis.
Sure.
Who are you?
I'm an Iowa native. I was born in Mason City. I went to Valley High School in West Des Moines. That makes me a Valley girl. And so my first career was mortgage banking. And I worked for Norwest in the days when they weren't doing that type of thing, becoming Wells Fargo. And then I went back to school at 31 for journalism. And I worked for 2 decades in journalism. I got up here via my second stint in the Des Moines Register when they had a weekly section. And I am married to a physics professor. I have no children that have 2 legs. I have 4 that have 4 legs. Okay. I'm known for being very robust for open government, which is not just transparency, but I want the public involved from the very start.
Mm-hmm. And for the record, you were the only dissenting vote for the CAFOs.
Correct.
At the recent hearing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yes.
Loris Olson was sworn in this month as chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors, and she's been a Story County supervisor since 2017, right?
Correct.
Thank you for joining us, and you'll come back?
I will.
Okay.
It's nice to be back with the quilts. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Loris.